like to, at this time, because after the singing of the next hymn, we'll hear from the Honorable Joel Dabena. It's my privilege to introduce him. You can see written under his title tonight, Service of Remembrance, that Judge Dabena was born in Elkhart, Indiana. He graduated from the University of Alabama in 1970, and then with his law degree from Samford University in 1973. A law clerk from 1973 to 1974, then in private practice from 1974 to 1983. Judge Dabena currently serves as Senior United States Circuit Judge of the United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Court. He's married to Beth Gordy Dabena. They have 3 children, 7 grandchildren. You can read that all for yourself, as I've just read to you. Off the script, he is a dear friend. He is a leader in this church. He is an elder in this church as well. He is really as godly and as wise as he is adventurous, as his mountain climbing exploits will attest. We're honored to have you, Judge Dabena, and thank you for bringing the remarks tonight. The word of the Lord in Matthew chapter 28, beginning in verse 16. Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee to the mountain to which Jesus had directed them. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Jesus came and said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age."
Let me begin by saying I'm honored to be here tonight to participate in this memorial service as we remember all the men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice, from the colonial wars to the Revolutionary War to all of the wars our nation has fought right up to our present day conflicts, so that you and I can enjoy the liberties and freedoms we have as American citizens. I particularly want to thank Claude and Patrick for inviting me to speak tonight. First, I will tell you what I'm not going to talk about tonight. Even though I have been a federal judge for 35 years, and I think I know something about constitutional law, you can rest easy knowing that tonight I will not be speaking about the law. The sole purpose of this service tonight is to honor our military, especially those who have fallen in all the wars and conflicts our nation has fought. My remarks tonight will concentrate on all those who have served in all of our different branches of the military. There is no higher honor or more solemn privilege one can have than to pay tribute to our nation's honored dead. But first, let me give you some personal background as to why I have the highest respect for anyone who has served was presently serving in our armed forces. My brother, sister, and I were raised in a family where we were taught as very young children to respect all men and women who wear the uniform, no matter which branch of the military service. My father served in the Army in World War II, and my father-in-law, Bill Gordy, served in the Navy. My father served in Europe and then in Washington, D.C., and my father-in-law was a naval officer on a destroyer that was hit by a Japanese torpedo in the Pacific Ocean. Several of his fellow sailors died, and he was thrown from one deck to another and could have easily been killed. As a result of this event, part of my father-in-law's skull had to be removed, and for the rest of his life, he had a metal plate in his head. Toward the end of the war, after receiving an honorable discharge from the Army, my father was summoned back to Washington, D.C. In 1942, the Office of Strategic Services was created, which was the precursor to the Central Intelligence Agency. Its first director was William Donovan, also known as Black Jack, who himself was a decorated war hero and recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor. He was also a classmate at Columbia Law School of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Interestingly, Roosevelt was a liberal Democrat and Donovan was a conservative Republican. Notwithstanding their political differences, the two were good friends, and it was Roosevelt who asked Donovan to head America's first spy agency. In 1945, because my father was fluent in five languages, English, Russian, German, French, and Finnish, he was called to serve in the Strategic Services Unit of the War Department in Washington. While there, he served in the war crimes section, and while not a lawyer, he worked closely with 152 other OSS agents in putting together the evidence that led to the prosecution of major Axis criminals before the International Tribunal at Nuremberg, Germany. The evidence that these OSS agents assembled was given to the American legal team headed by Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson. After being convicted, many of these Nazi war criminals appropriately received the death penalty, others long prison sentences, and a few, like Hermann Göring, committed suicide. One of my most prized possessions is a letter from Donovan to my father, dated February 4, 1946, the year before my birth, thanking my father for his work in helping the American legal team successfully prosecute these Nazi war criminals. In later years, I tried to get my father to talk about his work on the Nuremberg war trials, but he refused. The only thing I remember him saying was that in light of the most horrific crimes committed by humanity against humanity, none of the defendants showed any remorse. In fact, some said if given the chance, they would do it again. These were evil men who murdered millions of people, including men, women, children, and babies. I believe the evil my father witnessed haunted him up until the day of his death. As a result of his superb work on the Nuremberg war trials, my father became one of the first CIA agents in the history of the agency. In 1949, the CIA wanted to send my father to China because I think they already saw the problems with Korea looming on the horizon. My father was not thrilled about going to China, so he and my mother began looking around for other opportunities. My father saw in a publication where the Air University at Maxwell Air Force Base here in Montgomery was looking for a command historian. Because of my father's background with a master's degree in history and his fluency in foreign languages, he applied and got the position. This is how our family ended up in Montgomery, Alabama. At the time of the move, I was a mere 2.5 years old. Over the years, my father worked closely with a number of three-star generals. The first, General Lawrence Cutter, ended up getting his fourth star when he became commander of the North American Air Defense Command. Even though my father's position was non-military, he enjoyed working with and traveling with many distinguished United States Air Force officers and enlisted men. Military service in our family did not end with my father or father-in-law, although they set the example for the rest of us. My brother went to Auburn University on a full naval ROTC scholarship, and after being stationed all over the world, he did one tour of duty in South Vietnam. If you are old enough to remember, in the late 1960s, President Richard Nixon ordered Haiphong Harbor mined, and then a year later decided that was not such a good idea. My brother was the commanding officer on the minesweeper that had to go into the harbor and get all the mines out. Before he left, my mother cried many a tear, thinking he might not return from such a dangerous mission. At the University of Alabama in the 1960s, all male students for 2 years were required to take either Army or Air Force ROTC. The Air Force program nationwide was actually started by General William C. Lindley, who, while I was in high school, was stationed at Maxwell Air Force Base. His son Mike, who today lives in Kerrville, Texas, is one of my best friends, and we still see each other several times a year. Remembering my father's experience in the Army, I opted for the Air Force ROTC program. After graduating from the university, 21 out of 22 of my fraternity brothers commissioned as second lieutenants in the Army went to South Vietnam. They all came back, but a few without arms or legs. I went to basic training at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas, and was later stationed at Keesler Air Force Base in Biloxi, Mississippi. Nicky Griffin, a fellow fraternity brother and very good friend and member of this church, and I joined the 187th Tactical Reconnaissance Group, which in the late 1960s had the F-84. Those were later replaced by the workhorse airplane in South Vietnam, the F-4, and then the F-16. Soon that unit, because of its reputation for excellence, will have the F-35, the most sophisticated fighter airplane in America's arsenal today. After being honorably discharged and after graduating from law school, the 187th wanted me to come back as their chief legal officer. I thought long and hard about it because I had made many friends in that unit, but because Beth and I had just started a family and I was trying hard to establish a law practice, I turned it down. I will always cherish the good times and wonderful people I met during my service in the military. I will confess to all of you tonight, I have never been in harm's way, not in the military at least. Some of you in this room have. The real heroes, in my view, are those who have given their lives for their country and those who have risked their lives for their country. Arlington National Cemetery, as well as other military cemeteries in our country and around the world, are full of American heroes who did just that. Tonight's program refers to John 15:13, where Jesus said, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." Christian love is not just a feeling. It is an act of the will. The proof of our love is not in our feelings, but in our actions, even to the extent of laying down our lives for the cause of Christ and for one another. You and I are commanded to treat others the way God treats us. The brave men and women in our military have been doing that since our earliest conflicts, and so should we. I have always personally believed that the primary purpose of our national government is to protect our citizens from all enemies, foreign and domestic. For me, everything that comes after that is incidental. The reason the United States of America is the most powerful nation in the world is because God in His sovereignty has blessed our nation with a strong military. Without it, nothing else much matters. I also believe we have been blessed because in the conflicts in which we have been engaged, we have always sought to ensure that good prevails over evil. As long as we keep doing that, I think God will continue to bless our beloved country. The founding of our nation was more than just a political event. It was an act of faith, a promise by our forefathers to the American people and to the entire world to create and preserve our republic. The Declaration of Independence declared that people can govern themselves, that they can live in freedom with equal rights, and they can respect the rights of others. The Constitution of the United States, the supreme law of the land, came into creation only through divine intervention. Three separate branches of our national government, each with different functions and powers, acting on a check and balance on one another, is nothing short of genius. Our forefathers were brilliant men, but as they drafted the Constitution and worked through their differences, they relied on the power and guidance of Almighty God. I close tonight with famous quotes from some of our former presidents that were made by them in Memorial Day speeches. Each one of these quotes has special meaning to me, and I hope they will for you as well. President Harry S. Truman said, "Our debt to the heroic men and valiant women in the service of our country can never be repaid. They have earned our undying gratitude. America will never forget their sacrifices." President Dwight D. Eisenhower said, "A people that values its privileges above its principles soon loses both." President Ronald Reagan said, "I don't have to tell you how fragile the precious gift of freedom is. Every time we hear, watch, or read the news, we are reminded that liberty is a rare commodity in this world." And finally, President George H.W. Bush said, "The men and women who gave their lives in service to our country were dedicated to the worthy cause of freedom, and not one of them died in vain. From colonial America to the Persian Gulf, they fought and sacrificed so that others might live in peace, free from the fear of tyranny and aggression. On this Memorial Day, our hearts should swell with thankfulness and pride as we reflect on our nation's enduring heritage of liberty under law and on the continuing expansion of democratic ideals around the globe. As you and I celebrate this Memorial Day, may we pause to thank God for all the men and women who died for our freedom, and may we all pray that He will continue to bless the greatest country in the world, the United States of America. Thank all of you for being here tonight. May God bless each one of you, and may God bless America.